Marital status matter when it comes to politics, for men or for women. Chinese state media has criticized Taiwan's female president for being single. It's partly political, of course, but we'll be hearing from women in both countries on what it's like to be unmarried and how they feel about being judged on their marital status. Post on facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay.
Good morning. It is currently 8:30 and you are listening to Raven Radio KCAW in Sitka. This morning on Raven News, we heard from KCAW's Emily Kwong, who reported on a program proposed at last night's assembly meeting. Assemblymen Tristan Gavon and Bob Petruski volunteered to address an issue brought to the assembly back in February by Chief Administrative Officer Jay Sweeney. In February, Sweeney informed the assembly of some 800 Sitka households whose utilities are shut off every year due to the fact that the homeowners can't pay the bill to keep utilities on. Gavon and Petruski came up with a subsidy program that would allow eligible homeowners to have some of their utility bill paid for by the city. The subsidy program would be run by an outside contractor due to the sensitivity of the personal information needed in order to decide who is eligible for the program. The assembly approved the proposal for a second reading, which will happen at their next meeting on June 14th. We also heard about the king salmon commercial fishery on the Stikine River in southeast Alaska. The fishery has already been closed due to low numbers of fish caught in early May. The gillnet fleet that fishes the Stikine River waters near Wrangell and Petersburg had three 24-hour openings in May, and around 25 boats made landings. But those boats averaged only 1 to 3 fish per boat. As a result of these numbers and the low numbers of mark recapture fish, the fishery has been closed. There is some hope that the Stikine King Salmon run is just late and that the fish are yet to arrive. But for the time being, the gillnet fleet around Wrangell and Petersburg is done fishing until June 13th when the sockeye fishery opens. And finally, we heard from Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld, who reported on some of the budget issues for the Alaska Marine Highway System. In particular, the ferry system is considering selling the ferry Taku in order to make up for the tight budget. As a result of budget issues, the Southeast Alaska ferry schedule for this upcoming winter is expected to be even smaller than the one citizens had to use last year. It's currently 49 degrees outside under overcast skies. In Sitka and throughout the listening region, we can all expect cloudy skies with some scattered showers and some very light winds. And up next is the Fabulous Garden Show. They will be chatting about herbs, so do stay tuned for that. Good morning.
Programming on KCAW is provided by First Bank, a local funding source for boat loans, home loans, and remodel projects with a home equity loan or line of credit. First Bank, the one who's here. Member FDIC and equal housing lender.
The Sitka Studio of Dance and the Greater Sitka Arts Council are seeking soloists and couples for the second production of Sitkins Can Dance. Dancers of any style, high school freshmen or older, are welcome, and you will have 3 minutes to be on stage. The event is October 22nd. To participate or for more information, call Sarah at 747-2787 or visit thinkartthinksitka.com.
Welcome to the Garden Show. My name is Kitty LaBounty.
And I'm Molly Kabler, and we're here to talk about gardening with herbs today. We are live in the studio, 747-5878.
So we would love to take your phone calls with comments about what's going on in your garden or any questions or anything like that. First, before we go into herbs, I did want to make sure folks were alerted to looking for aphids. We had a pretty mild winter. Fact is, I think that's almost an understatement in terms of how mild our winter was. But usually when we have mild winters, we have really big aphid populations. And this year, that seems to be true. I mostly have trouble with them on my columbines. So I've been watching my columbine stems, and they do indeed have aphids. And I usually use just a little bit of real soap mixed into water, and I spray it on them, and that works super well. I've also heard people say they've had problems on young maples. So watch things. If things starting to look you know, kind of fussy, but or even if before they look fussy, look at the softer stems, especially the flowering stems, and look for those little lovely sucking bugs.
I know the I had a couple of violas that wintered over and were really starting to look good, and the aphids have pretty much wiped them out. They're in containers, and that's been a real resurgence. So a spring, a warm spring in addition to a mild winter, really pretty tough combination.
And I just remembered, I was like, oh, there was something else I wanted to talk about. One was I finally finished, I got the results, the retest of the which treatment heats the soil the most. Is it clear plastic, black plastic, Rime? And then I had a control, no cover at all. So by far, in a way, it is still clear plastic. So that's the second year in a row. I'm feeling like I'm going to stand behind those numbers, that if you want to heat up your soil, clear plastic is the way to go.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for that research and then following it up with more research.
Exactly. You've got to repeat your
experiment. So if you didn't have a chance to hear about this early on, what it means is that if you are looking to heat up your bed with a cover, or whether it's black plastic or clear plastic. And so the summary is clear plastic over your beds for the late part of the winter and early spring on into whenever you're ready to plant things is the way to have that soil temperature as warm as possible.
And I suppose you could always try it for like some weed relief as well, you know, because in a hot summer, you know, or a hot sunny day, that clear plastic's really going to like soak it up and heat that zone. And who knows, could do some damage to those young weed seeds, but they're pretty tough. So who knows?
So we wanted to talk about growing herbs in Southeast Alaska, and it turns out our climate is actually very good for a lot of herbs. Traditionally, we think of, as gardeners, the Mediterranean climate as the most ideal for a lot of herbs, and that is true, but with a few modifications and care, you can do pretty well with growing herbs here. We'll say it from the get-go, if you're trying to grow basil and you're not using some sort of greenhouse or cloche or enclosure, you will not likely be very successful here in Southeast Alaska. So basil is an indoor herb for us, but so many of the other ones, including the typical Mediterranean climate herbs, can do really well here.
Yeah, basil is kind of a fun one. It's nice to grow, and it's one you want to grow from seed for the most part. You can buy plants occasionally in town, but you don't necessarily want to rely on being able to get those. So you can start them from seed, and they've done fine for me under Rime. You know, just some of the spun row cover. Most years I have these cute little cloche things that I'm going to grow them under this year. I think it's a plant that's worthwhile growing, but and I've grown different kinds of basil, but I never quite grow enough for pesto, so I have this French sorrel that I've been using for kind of the pesto substitute, and it works really well, and it's a perennial herb. Some days I call it a vegetable, but today I'm going to call it an herb. So French sorrel is a nice sub for that.
So I wanted to start by talking about the ones that are truly very easy to grow in our climate so that you can have a chance at the most success. And I would say this to start it off with, the easiest and the toughest are the mints. Mints do really well here, and they hardly need anything special. And in fact, sometimes you have to watch out, because if you give them something special, they try to take over the world. But peppermint, spearmint, the orange mint, the fuzzy one, and really any of the other true mints are all really easy to grow here. There's a lot of other mint family herbs to grow that we don't call mints, and those are kind of the next tier. But I know even the chocolate mint is usually, you know, will last over the winter and pretty easy to carry over year to year.
What I like about peppermint, especially, peppermint seems to be the toughest one in my garden, and it spreads nicely by little underground roots, but they're easy to pull up. I've been doing battle with a lot of woody spreading roots like that, and they are a pain. But peppermint, you know, if it just gets a little bit too out of where you want it, you just can pull on it and then eat it, for that matter. So it's pretty good. You can use it in flower, in bouquets, in your house. If you put it someplace near where you're walking, if you accidentally stomp on it, it doesn't mind if you stomp on it, and it smells good when you stomp on it. So Peppermint, I think, is a great plant to have in your garden for a variety of reasons.
By contrast to the basil, which you would grow from seed, mint taste, there's a variety of tastes that each mint plant can have. And so for your best bet, actually, taste the mint if you can. Get a piece from someone and actually taste the mint. I bought one from a commercial source, and it really was kind of skunky, and it didn't taste very good. So I ended up letting that one go and trying again. So most of the time, they're all going to be fine, but occasionally you will get one that doesn't have the best flavor. So mints, for the most part, you want to buy as starts rather than from seed.
So another member of the mint family is the anise hyssop. And it's a little tougher to grow in terms of it doesn't overwinter as nicely as like the peppermints and the spearmints. But it, if you like licorice, this is the plant for you. Okay, this is a plant for me. I love licorice. I love the way it tastes when you, you know, chew on the leaves. It's not overpowering of licorice, but it has a really nice flavor. And it's one that seems like it, you can grow from seed or you can get a start from a friend, but it doesn't tend to, that individual plant won't overwinter. But it's a good one to have around.
So the other plant that's, I know a lot of people in Southeast Alaska that have great success growing under whatever variable conditions is oregano. And so the one that we have around here colloquially, everyone refers to it as Greek oregano. I don't really know what that means. That's what it was called when it was given, a share was given to me. I also have a couple of commercial varieties. One's called hot and spicy. So there's lots of oreganos out there, and they're easy and they're productive in our climate, and the flavor's going to be best if you try and catch them just before they bloom. But even after that, they're fine. So they're pretty well behaved and they don't need anything special, the oreganos.
Yeah, I like that. Another one that has done well for me for a number of years, actually for as long as I've been having a garden up here, is sage. And many winters, it overwinters and becomes super abundant. So I have one in one of those black pots, basically. Those black pots that seem to be ubiquitous in Southeast Alaska. That's I think this one's on its fourth year. And it has really nice growth. I feed it a little bit more than I would normally because I want it to grow more leaves than I want it to burst into flower, which it will do once they get older. They're going to flower every year. I mean, that's just what plants do to reproduce. So I feed it and it does super well in that pot, but it overwinters and I can pick sage most of the year.
So sage comes in different colors. It comes in variegated with some pink on it, this, that, and the other thing, different shapes and sizes. If you're hoping to overwinter it and use it for culinary purposes, go for pretty much the standard hardy Holt, mammoth, you know, the plain white sage. So there are beautiful ones if you want to buy them and use them in a part of your garden or building a basket or something for aesthetic purposes. They're fantastic. But for your best culinary use and overwintering, go for that plain, large-leafed green sage.
Yeah, it does super well. So the other plant I really like to have in my garden that I plant every year from seed is dill. Dill's one of those plants I use in pickles. I put it on fish. I use it in a variety of things, mostly the leaves, but you can also, if you let it flower, you can use the seeds then as well. And I've grown a variety of different beasts. I've grown fern leaf. The other one I've grown is this, actually the first year, this year is Hera. Fern leaf has done well. The Long Island mammoth has done well. All those different varieties do, they seem to do quite well. And I plant them from seed. They don't take any fuss and they transplant easily as well. So it's another nice plant to have in your garden. You can use it up. It's not going to overwinter. You know, it's pretty much as an annual in our climate. And as far as I know, everywhere where it lives, because it will go into flowering that first year. But that's a good thing since you can use both parts.
One thing to keep in mind about dill is it is an incredible slug magnet, and those leaves are so fine that if a couple of slugs find it, your dill can be gone in one night.
Monsters.
So I know if you like growing dill, start plenty. It's easy from seed, as Kitty mentioned. Start quite a bit more than you think you're going to use if you have to share. Or consider it one of those plants that you grow up on a deck or in a container so that you don't have to battle with slugs if that's something that happens. There's two others that are really easy to grow from seed and I think well worth it in Southeast Alaska. One is cilantro. It's it tends to bolt pretty quickly. It's just not quite as productive as dill in some instances. There is a variety named Calypso that I've seen that is grows a lot longer before bolting, so you might look for that one. Or just plan to grow it and harvest it and enjoy that incredibly fresh taste of cilantro right away. And know that you shouldn't be waiting for it to be a long, large, bushy plant, because that's not how it's going to be. And then the one other one, really pretty easy to grow from seed or nice to get is starts, and I like to do both, is parsley. And whether you grow the green curly one or the flat-leafed, they're a lot of value for how much energy they take, and they're great either as a garnish. I really like the taste of parsley. It seems some do, some don't. The big flat-leafed varieties are super productive, and the curly ones too. So if you like parsley, it's a little slower to establish in our climate from seed if you haven't started it real early. So a nice way to do it is to do some seed now and get it going, but then also buy a starter too so you can harvest and taste parsley right away and then have more growing on later in the season.
So mine overwintered this year, both of my big plants, and right now they're about, I would say, like a foot and a half in diameter. And they're really good. They still taste really good. They're starting to form flowers, which is expected because they're a biennial. So usually the second year they're going to go in flower, but that's fine. I'll use them up. And then by the time I'm done with those plants, my new ones that are coming on, will be doing well. Other plant I really like to have in my garden are chives. Chives are one that you don't start from seed. You usually get a little start from a friend, and you plant them, and
forever you have them. Chives. And the one of the things that I like about chives, besides the fact that they are so easy to grow, is that they're really very beautiful in the garden. They have that incredibly bold green, you know, self to them, but then also great spicy lavender flowers when they bloom. And both the leaves and the flowers are edible. The flowers are a little bit spicy if you don't, you know, you might try it before you get too much in your food on the flowers. But they're a great addition even just for the color in your
salads. They're gorgeous. So bees really love chive flowers. So if you're a little worried about bees in terms of like getting stung by them, put the chives somewhere, you know, where you're not going to go bumping into them all the time. I haven't ever been stung by any of our native bumblebees, which are mostly what we have around here, but there's always a first time. But I do notice that when those flowers bloom, they are just covered. So that's also a good thing, bringing more pollinators and feeding those pollinators that come into your garden.
So another one that's pretty easy to grow and will frequently overwinter are the thymes. And thymes come in lots of different shapes and sizes. Well, not so many sizes, but they're a small leafed plant, but they come in different colors and flavors. But like the sage, the one that you're going to do best with is the straightaway culinary sage that's a plain green. I love the variegated ones, and there's yellow ones, you know, different ones with a lot of delightful addition to the garden in terms of color and form. But if you're looking for the culinary one, get that same plain green one. They're all going to add thyme flavor. And I think the other exception, I guess, is the woolly thyme. There's a lot of people who enjoy the woolly thyme for draping it over rocks. And while it may not be quite as palatable as the plain green one, it's still a thyme and it still can be used in food preparation.
So a couple other plants that I really like having in the garden that don't always overwinter. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. One is lemon balm. It's another member of the mint family, and it has, you know, kind of that overall mint sort of growth look to it, but has a nice sort of lemony, fresh scent to it. And I've used it in a variety of, like, you know, put it in your iced tea, put it in your salad, things like that. And then the other one is rosemary. And this year, the rosemary is overwintered really nicely.
Right. So rosemary is one of those classic Mediterranean herbs. And it seems like if you can look for the hardier varieties, you'll have a better chance at overwintering it. And it does seems to do fine here, but even better if you have it in your greenhouse or under an eave. It really doesn't need very much water, and it really appreciates the extra heat. On a super cold and rainy summer, it can struggle here. And then if you don't have it in a pretty dry place, it will be less likely to overwinter. But there's lots of different rosemaries to try, and they're beautiful and great in the garden, both from a culinary standpoint and from if it goes into bloom, how beautiful it can be. I know it's not like Oregon or Washington where there's just, you know, hedges of rosemary, and some of us are somewhat jealous of that opportunity, but it is a great herb to grow and use in culinary.
Oh my goodness, speaking of hedges, the other one that can be absolutely beautiful if you have a super spot for it is lavender. And I love lavender. I had a lavender, a Munstead dwarf that lived in my garden for, I don't know, 15 years, and then finally decided it had had enough. But it's one of those plants, like a lot of these herbs, really, they are full sun herbs. So if you have a spot in your garden with a raised bed or containers or something like that, that has as much sun as we're going to get, that's going to be the place to put these herbs of choice.
I think the other option, another good option, is if you have a deck or against a sunny mm-hmm. wall yeah. where there will be extra heat and maybe some shade from, or some cover from some of the rain, because they don't need as much rain as they would get in an open bed. So, you know, really it's either the most full sun or up against a building where you can really have a warm garden spot. One of the things that we've mostly talked about so far are all the culinary herbs. And there are many herbs that can be grown that are considered herbs, but we don't necessarily use them as much in food, direct food prep. Might use them in flavorings, but they're sort of traditionally herbs. And one of those are the catmints. So again, another mint. People hear that, and if they're not familiar, they think we're saying catnip, which is pretty commonly known as one of the mint plants that cats in particular have some super affinity for and seem to act crazy when they get a chance to ingest it. But there's actually, there's soft gray-green plants that bloom with a beautiful purple or blue flowers. And so the catmints are a really nice one. They are an herb, but we don't tend to use them in cooking. And then there's lots of other plants that are considered herbs that I think are well worth growing, and, you know, maybe not in your bed where you're planning to grow the herbs to harvest, but would look great mixed among your perennials.
So one, I often grow the catmints, that's the Nepetas, and they do pretty well. And I have sometimes put those in the vegetable beds and sometimes in the flower beds, depending. Another really a traditional herb is calendula, which grows super well here. And actually, that's another plant that overwintered in my garden. I didn't pull them up, and they are blooming like mad right now. But that was called pot marigold. If you look in older writings about different herb uses, they're talking about calendulas, not about marigolds. And they grow quite well here.
Another one that traditionally got called an herb is the alcamilla, which is the lady's mantle, classic old-fashioned flower that is not known for its actual flower. It's known for the shape of the leaf and how beautiful it is and how it holds beads of water in a really special way. And if we can have plants that we can enjoy the way they react with water. I think that's
oh
great.
Yeah, that's definitely one. So one last mention of a crazy, and I might have to call this a spice, is ginger. So I started growing ginger from a start I had left over in my kitchen from in the pantry, basically. And I'm growing those inside, and apparently I'm going to see if I can get this growing in bigger and bigger pots so I can harvest ginger. So I'll let you know how that goes.
Sounds like a great experiment.
And for The Garden Show, I'm Kitty LaBounty.
And I'm Molly Kabler.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In New Mexico, a crowd gathered outside the Albuquerque Convention Center Tuesday. People were behind a barricade as others made their way into the building to hear from presidential candidate Donald Trump. Jairo Marcus was among those behind the barricade.
I have a big sign that says, "Hug a Mexican."
Absolutely.